The theme for the afternoon talk is the power of mindful living. Human beings are blessed in a way with a variety of inner resources. We take a look at our inner life. We see experiences which unfold. Some of those experiences we genuinely appreciate and enjoy. And the inner life can be warmed through the feelings which have an emergence, through the experiences which come to us, and that touches us, and there is the condition of being mindful. Mindful of happiness in life, mindful of the pleasures of life. And we can also notice as well the thoughts which accompany that event. So something happens to us, we see a beautiful woman or a man, we see the trees and the flowers, the lovely food or whatever it might be, and the impact of that contact and that touch upon us. The hand going up. I don't think it's about us levitating. This is as close as I can get to it without licking it. So there are experiences which take place, and in these experiences which take place, joy, appreciation, gratitude. And the touch upon the senses can contribute to that, as well as memory and sometimes the ideas with regard to the future. And human beings love the happy, pleasurable experience. It's an important part of our way of being in this world, and as I said, the mindfulness reveals it. But equally, and I mean equally important, is the unsatisfactory feeling. That which is difficult, that which touches us, and the thought may arise naturally enough, I wish this was different. I wish this experience wasn't taking place. And so there are the fields of experience, pleasant and unpleasant. There are thoughts around those experiences, and the thoughts around those experiences easily can be, I would like the continuity of the pleasurable, the happy experience, for it to sustain itself there. And I would like the discontinuity, the ending of the unpleasant, difficult experience. And it could be that our life appears to be a movement in time of going backwards and forwards between the pleasurable and the difficult and the painful, and sometimes the experience in between. Is that it? Is that what it means to be a human? Just to have the wish that it's more pleasurable and happier and easier, and have the wish that it's less difficult, less problematic, and easy. Life doesn't seem to provide us with any absolute kind of choice with this. The view may arise, I wish it was more like this, and I wish I didn't have to deal with this. And life comes in a certain kind of way, and it says to us, good luck. There are times, this is where the power of mindfulness comes in, it was touched upon a little bit with the group today, and apologies for the group that I failed to turn up to earlier on today, because there was another group going on with beloved Stephen and Leela, and I was over there and hadn't informed Iran. So the talk was about the emptiness of things over there, and then of course there's the ironic cosmic situation of the empty seat where Christopher's supposed to be. Such is life. So there are situations where we can find ourselves moving back and forward between the two. In the difficult experiences of life, though, as I said, the choice may be towards the other, but I'm not convinced nor certain that the choice towards the easier and the comfortable is the best. We are told that. Watch television programs and the advertising and those appalling Hollywood movies where it nearly always ends up so nice at the end. Completely unrealistic view of existence, but that's LA. So sometimes we wish to... Apologies to all the Americans who are sitting there. So sometimes there is the wish towards the difficult and the unpleasant. But what could be a view of life, a relationship to life, which acknowledges the left and the right hand of things, so to speak, in which the difficult and the challenging has the potential to bring the best out of us? And sometimes we, women and men, living and breathing and acting on this earth, sometimes that which is difficult, inwardly, outwardly, socially, environmentally, nationally, internationally, globally, we've looked at those situations, we felt some quite deep dissatisfaction with it, we felt some wish for change, we'd prefer to sleepwalk through life, and something out of the difficult brings something out of us which couldn't come out of the easy. Interesting life, isn't it? We need the difficult, we need the unpleasant. It's true and it's authentic, but it's to bring the power of the mindfulness to the difficult, to the unwelcome, to the unwanted, and to ask ourselves here and each other, what are the practical steps that can be brought about in the face of this difficult situation? It isn't enough for you and I, whatever the circumstance, to have the view, oh, it's so difficult. I am so difficult, she is so difficult, he is so difficult, everybody's so difficult. Just the initial response is not a sign of clarity. It's the view, the question in the meditations, I'm talking, not elsewhere, in the reflections as well, is what is a skillful response to apply to a difficult situation? It's easy to name the difficulty. One doesn't need a huge brand of intelligence. But it's not so easy to ask what's the steps that could be helpful through exploration, it's an exploration, through experiment, to help transform this situation, personally, socially, nationally, internationally, globally, or whatever. And that movement is the wise voice inside of us. It's what wisdom actually is about. Sometimes in the movement, and as you, I could give you lots of specifics here, but you've got your own stories. And as you listen, there may be a reference or two in your daily life of the difficult situation. that sometimes in the movement that takes place, we step back, we look at ourself there, and we realize, wow, I only have one single instrument to use in this world, which is the mind. Mind including heart, perception, thought, views, experience, knowledge, information. That's what I've got. There's nothing else. This is it. And this instrument, called the inner life, it then moves through the being and is receptive to eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and touch senses. It is receptive to its inner movement, memory. It's receptive to the movement of thought with regard to the future. That's all there is. That's all there is to work with. It's not enough, it is enough, and it's not a lot. Eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and touch. Memory, future, and the present. This is the human experience. And in this field of experience, there, what is the power of mindfulness? There. Its initial aspect, as you are seeing in the days here and other times, is the capacity, in a way, to reveal, understand reveal? To show, to indicate, to let something stand out. The human being, with these qualities that we have the opportunity to let something stand out and be clear. It's standing out. Like one person in the group today, a common voice. There can be a lot going on inside oneself at any time. Feelings, thoughts, moods, changes, states of mind. And we're not quite sure what's going on inside of us. Sometimes we haven't got a clue. We don't know what the hell is going on inside of us. All this commotion is actually going on. And it might just be, sometimes, the single word, the single act of the naming of it, just gives it a little bit of clarity. A person came on a previous retreat, and he said, "Christopher, I am so confused. I'm incredibly confused. I'm so confused about mindfulness, meditation, all this. I'm so confused." And I said to him, "You sound very clear about that." He says, "Oh, I'm very clear about that." It's an extraordinary in the inner life that, this is important, there can be the emergence of a clarity about the absence of the clarity. Human, you know, it's quite something, isn't it? One can be clear, one is totally unclear. This moment of clarity or mindfulness could be considered as the first step to the transformation of life. It could be that important. One is clear about what's going on, in this case inwardly, or mindful, or clear about something that is going on outwardly. If, this is the important thing, if the mindfulness which makes something clear to you, you act. That's the power. You act. You sit on the meditation cushion and you face your existence. You act. You walk up and down to feel sky above and earth below and what it is to walk on this earth. You act. You remember that when you leave here, you need a clear, loving, thoughtful conversation with another because you're mindful you've got a problem between the two of you. So the mindfulness in life, when empowered, acts. And sometimes that action is into the bigger steps of life, the social situations, the stereotyping of people, the rejection of people, the not knowing of people. And sometimes we look and we wish to be honest with ourselves. And that honesty is because there's no choice about it. That's what truth is. Truth doesn't have choices. We're honest, we're truthful about it. And we may say, the other, whoever the other may be, I express views and opinions about whoever the other may be, but actually, I don't know them. I've never sat down and had any deep conversations. I've never made any steps to really become familiar with and communicate with and listen to and learn with or understand or explore with. I've never done any of that. And when you and I, how easy it is in human experience, make judgments or be judgmental about others and those that we don't know, we've never had any time with, do you know what we are? We're second-hand people, because there's no experience, there's nothing original. We're just repeating foolishly, naively, what we've been told. And we've internalized it, what we've been told, and then we just repeat it as if it was true. As if we knew what we were talking about. And we can't even remember who the agents were that we identified with who made us second-hand people. There's no dignity in being a second-hand human being. There's no integrity in it. We're clones. We're just repeating. The power of mindfulness is to find the original voice and not just repeating what we've been told, no matter who it is, including this fellow in here today. Get that in quick. So we listen to the voice. We listen inwardly. And if we repeat, if we pick it up, we know it's come from somewhere else, whoever or whatever it might be. The power of mindfulness will remember. We'll remember where that came from. That group, that individual, that government, that story in the media, that which I was told in school, that which my parents pumped into me. If we have some power of mindfulness, we'll know where it came from. If we don't have that power to remember where these things come from, can we at least say it came from somewhere else, it didn't come from me? Whew, that would open up the space, wouldn't it? Golly, who would have thought? We could be authentic human beings. We could be original. We could trust in our authority. We could have our experiences. We could find out through our experiences. We could really get to know each other. We could get to know our neighbours. We could get to know those who live on the other side of the wall. Whoa. So the power of mindfulness is the light which reveals, when it's empowered, allows us to make some steps. Just a couple of weeks ago in Britain, it was 20 years since the death of Princess Diane. Princess Diane was elevated in Britain, actually elsewhere as well, amongst a number of people, what I call into the realms of the gods. In Britain, high up there. Charlie and his lover were left far behind. And so the country was, lots of documentaries and programs and on her period. And many of us kind of fell in love with her. She was quite an original. The capacity to share on the TV all of her issues and problems there, which brought in millions of audiences, including myself, to watch. And her beauty and her compassion, a complex woman. A week after, this is a story, the week after, she was one of the campaigners to get a treaty to stop the planting of the, what Americans would call, anti-personnel mines under the ground. I've seen people's legs blown off minutes after anti-personnel mines have been put in the ground. And I was standing, if I may say, with Maha Goshananda. Maha Goshananda, he was the patriarch, now passed from this world, of Kampuchea, Cambodia. He and I were standing on the step and helping to launch the UN to help ban the use of these anti-personnel mines, land mines, as the Europeans would call it there. So there was a lot of media around us. And, you know, they do wanting questions to Maha Goshananda and myself, and they're on the Senate. And Maha Goshananda, a Buddhist monk, whose 17 relatives were all murdered, exterminated, in the Holocaust of Cambodia by the Khmer Rouge. 2.5 million people were slaughtered. And we're standing there on the steps, and reporters wanted a response. Maha Goshananda was nominated for the Nobel Prize 5 times. And he and I were in the same monastery. We love each other, best of friends. And he stated one sentence. 20 years later, I'm now repeating. He said, "The landmines, the anti-personnel mines, under the ground, got there for one reason only. They started off in our mind. The mind made and manufactured and delivered and buried the landmines, of which there are hundreds of thousands of them in Cambodia, in Angola, and other places. They started off in the mind." He said, "We have to uproot the landmine in our own mind as much as under the ground." And then he said, "Thank you," and sat down. I turned to Maha Goshananda, as the Buddhists say, "Sadhu, well said, well said." The conflicts and the external events, called the anti-personnel mine, called the wall, called the divisions or whatever, start off in the human mind. They are the material manifestation of the walls inside. It's going to take quite something, isn't it? to love each other. It's going to take something to let go of the years of indoctrination you and I have had. It's going to take quite something to see, can the power of the mindfulness and the sharing and the exploration in the family dynamics, in the social dynamics or whatever, and inside of ourselves, help to dissolve the walls. Because when the walls come down, it's liberation. It's freedom. And these teachings are about bringing down those divisions and fragmentations between us. In the difficult experiences, let me just have a sip of the water. In fact, the beloved interpreter there, she said to me before coming, "Christopher, remember to breathe." So I'm not going too fast at the gallop. And in the difficult experiences, which are not always such bad news, because there's potential in the difficult, sometimes the culture that we live in gives us a strange idea, because strange people think up these ideas, that we all have choices. This is Western consumerist propaganda. We all have choices. And it's a myth. Much of it is a myth. I don't remember choosing to be born. I don't remember choosing that I would never meet my father, brought up by a single mum. I don't remember asking to be male with one ear sticking out and the other one not. At least Charles has got both ears sticking out. I don't remember all the kind of incidents which happened to me from without and within, which I don't remember having a choice about. I don't remember in the 10 years of the East being extremely happy with diarrhea, constipation, fever, sickness, hepatitis, and loads of other, snake bites, and loads of other things. And then we're told we have choices. Sometimes in life, back to the power of mindfulness, touched upon in a little bit in the group, could it be that the richness and the best comes out of us actually when we have no choice? Choice isn't, I think choice is a bummer, to be excuse the vernacular. Because choice is, shit, I shouldn't use that word, very naughty. Choice is, I can't make my mind up. Choices, I could do this, or I could do that, or I could do this, and you're sitting there in your meditation, and the exploration of a liberated way of life, and you're wondering whether you should eat tomatoes or cucumber this evening. It's hardly going to be a big change in lifestyle, is it? So sometimes in life, the choices are being produced. And they're being produced because the mind is lacking power. And there is too much movement in the inner life. And those waves in the inner life are moving ripples, tsunamis, earthquakes, mindquakes, moving on inside. They reach the surface and then one comes up with the views, I've got so many choices to make. Yeah. And then you bore the life out of your friends, telling them about all the big choices you've got to make in life. They're not interested. They're thinking about their own choices. I say, we're human beings, we are bizarre. So if we can find the quiet power of mindfulness, a quiet steadiness in our meditations, but also equally important, what in your life it really is worth concentrating upon? That's the question. Not, shall I choose to do this or shall I choose to do that? And if one says to oneself as a human being, whatever it might be, this in life is worth concentrating on, this in life really is worth making primary, the question that will go with it is, what are you going to let go of? What are you going to drop? What are you going to do without? And therefore, quietly, the mindfulness, the power of concentration, which we are developing here together, serve as a support for making something happen, because one's got the power of the mindfulness and the concentration to stay steady with it. We want to keep these two deep responses of the human really alive as well. But then the thought arises, it's a common one, Christopher, I don't know what to concentrate on. I don't know what I'm doing with my life. There. And so the mind is moving around hither and thither. And I mentioned in one of the groups, my grandson. Sometimes our kids or our grandkids are our teacher. And he made this lovely one-line statement. He said, everybody, which is, you know, that's a pretty big generalization, however, he's a teenager, he's got a right to his views. He said, Granddad, everybody in life needs something to concentrate on which makes them happy. Everybody in life needs something to concentrate on which makes one happy. Doesn't mean to say that what you and I concentrate on will make us happy all the time, of course. But there is a genuine sense in life, there is something authentic about it. It nearly always involves benefit for other people, or animals, or the environment, or all. And that capacity to find the priority in one's life, and here is a good place for that exploration, and to see, while here, are there changes in my life which can contribute to mindfulness, the power of mindfulness, the concentration that's required, and the energy which can come with it. And sometimes we discover in the being something genuinely worth staying true to. Be in all sorts of ways. For a wallah like me, as much as possible, staying concentrated and steady on the Dharma, on being a small servant of others. Another person may say on creativity and expressing something and contributing something to our arts and our culture. And for another, giving support to the animals or giving support to the community, or giving support to people. Something in the being has the action of giving support. And for some, it really is one person to the other. I spoke with a mother in London recently, and who's a friend of my daughter's. And her son, maybe three or four years old, she's a single mum. The son has a skin problem, a skin disease, which generates a lot of irritation in the body. Every night and every day, every 2 hours, she wakes up to turn the boy over because he starts to cry, the little boy, with the pain from the skin infection. Every 2 hours, puts her hand on the boy and just turns over so he can have some extra rest. That requires huge amount of love, extraordinary devotion, and just quietly doing it. And sometimes we hear these remarkable stories of people and this dedication of the being. So in our meditations, in our meditations, just to give a little summary with you here, there's the power of the meditations, of the mindfulness. Do please, as much as you can, maximize your practices, sitting, walking, standing, and reclining. Really use the forms, the practices, that's one. Secondly, if it's difficult for you, which it certainly can be, that difficulty could be in the body, could be in the heart, or in the mind, or in the thoughts, or in the doubts, or whatever. When there's a lot of difficulty, this is important, we think the views about the difficulty are objective, and so they're outside of it. So we've got a difficult experience, and lots of views can be arising in the experience. This isn't so easy to understand. The difficult views which are arising is the experience. The views which are difficult, oh, I'm always like this, I'm so unhappy, I've got, oh, it's come up again, I'm no good, nothing ever goes right for me, etc. How long is it going to take for me to get out of this? Where are my car keys? And all the other views that go along with it. And we think the view is a description. It's a statement outside the box of the experience. This is the view. The view says this is how it is. This view is coming out of the mess. The view is the confirmation of the mess. The confirmation of the worry, the anxiety, the agitation. It's not about it. It is it. And the delusion, the deception, we think, oh, I'm describing it. No, 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 no. It's describing you. Apologies, but anyway, you know what I mean. So sometimes we may need to remember in the difficult experience with the problematic views about it. Just please remember one thing. This is just a view. It is just a view about. It's just the current narrow dogmatic, unhelpful, unhealthy way of looking at it. You won't remember all of those words, but you get the picture. Yeah. And it might be that one just, if one can, breathes in, breathes out through it, walks up and down all day and all night, no problem. There. Until there is a sense inside of coming out of the problematic view, which can generate some space inside of us for a fresh way to look, which is not problematic. You get it? You register? There's experience, it's painful, it's difficult. The views about it are just as painful and just as difficult. So we walk, we sit, we breathe through it there. When it's a little bit quieter there, we might then ask ourselves, what is the view which is a fresh way of looking at it? What the Buddhist word called finding your original mind. Not the habit of repeating the same old views and opinions about the same old issues. Not repeating the same old views and opinions about the same old issues. The quiet power of the mindfulness gives some potential and opportunity to liberate, this is an important thing here, to liberate a whole fresh way of seeing. And sometimes it is a surprise to ourselves that some insight, a new way of looking, emerges out of us. Not only are the teachers shocked, bad joke. Sometimes there's enough space, we're tired of repeating the same old views about ourselves and about others. We've said it a zillion times. It made no difference. It made it worse. We're not going to do that. We're going to listen deeply, and sometimes something completely fresh emerges out of us, quite spontaneously. One of our poets, and poets and change go together a great deal, and some of the great radicals of the past and present and future love the briefness of the poem to state something. In the few lines, sometimes, boom. The young guy, who I love the bits, 18th century, named Lord Byron. One hell of an eccentric human being. Poet, secret lover of the Prime Minister's wife, which could have got him there. Enjoyed men and women equally, wrote amazing poetry, wore Greek clothes when he was in Greece, and Greece still loves him to bits, and people like me because of his nomadic life. He was taking an exam in Oxford University. Oxford University, as I once said, in Oxford University, it wasn't welcome, but I said in there, I asked, is Oxford University an ego-making factory? Didn't go down very well. Kind of proved my point. And Byron is sitting there. He is asked to write an essay on Jesus, who went to a wedding at Canaan, in the Galilee, edge of the Galilee. And in this, that means the wedding host, the family, they ran out of wine. And Jesus, the miracle story is, he changed the water into wine. There. If you'd been a Buddhist, you would have changed the wine into water, but that's another story. So Byron is just sitting there. Got an hour, 2 hours to write this essay, and he's just sitting there and he's looking around and he's totally disinterested. And they're all sitting at these wooden, little wooden desks. I remember as a youngster, you know, it was at, I left school at 15, you know, there, so rather inspired by another of our Irish writers who said, he said, "The only time I stopped learning was when I went to school." I heard that and thought, it's time to go. So Byron's sitting there, and the head of the exam board walks down the line and turns to Byron and said, "Your sheet of paper has got nothing written on it, and there's only 2 minutes to go. You have to write something." And Byron picked up his pen and wrote, it's a gem, "The water saw its master and blushed." Understand blushed? Can be translated?
Smickle.
When we get embarrassed, yeah, our face goes red. "The water saw its master and went red." Blushed. Where did that one come from? He's just sitting there. He's doing nothing. And out comes this poetic beauty. It's in all of us. It's in the deep. It can come out. That's what we're here for. It's to liberate what's deep and profound so that we change this world. Thank you. Let's have a quiet minute, shall we? May all beings explore the power of mindfulness. May all beings concentrate on what really matters. May all beings live a liberated life. Thank you very much, everybody, for lending an ear. Time now is 4:40, and some further meditation time in here, outdoors, standing meditations, etc. Small group to meet with, and then at 5:30 time, of course, the evening food, and then there are a few people that meet with one-to-one, 6 o'clock, or just afterwards. And others have kindly left me some notes today as well on the board. And what I'll do, I'll just put your good names down with a time, and we'll start that in the morning after breakfast. I'll see you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.